Pod listeners, the bumper music was Who'll Stop the Rain. Not my guest coming up. The world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Major Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army, retired. That's going to bring up a question right away. Is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army prototype remote viewing training program. And I'll tell you right now, I know every ounce of that to be absolutely true. I had Major Dames' full military record, and he did exactly what he said he did. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, PSIINT, and currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. The technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero, a Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner production, Ed coached Sir Ben Kingsley and played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. I now have a DVD copy of that movie, which I have not yet watched, but I'm going to plop it in and watch it. I got an email from somebody that I'm going to, I think, hit Major Dames with in a moment. As a matter of fact, why let him warm up to the question? Major Dames, in a moment. Believe the solstice is upon us today in most time zones, being the longest day of the year. Luke in Baker, Louisiana, says, "Hey, Art, the word you were hunting for to describe the Mexican mud for the SUVs is machismo, an exaggerated masculinity. The patented name for our Mexican mud product would likely be, logically be, mudchismo." Right. Ed, welcome to the program.
Happy Father's Day, Art.
Thank you. From the islands, we speak to you, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For another couple of days.
For another couple of days, and then it's back to good old California.
Good old California.
Mm-hmm. Ed, I had an emailer that really sparked my interest earlier tonight, and he suggested to me, I know that what is claimed in your bio in the beginning is absolutely true, because I do have your military record, but this person said, "Look, Art, we've got a hiss on this line. Do you hear that?"
Let's see. No, I don't.
You turned off the hiss. What was that?
Did it go away? It was a fan. Fan's off.
Oh, thank you. I know how it is in Hawaii. Anyway, look, what the person said was, once a military intelligence officer, always a military intelligence officer. In other words, you may retire, but you never really totally fully retire from a job like that, and you still have contacts. And well, the emailer was frankly suspicious that somehow you're still involved in some backdoor way with military intelligence. How do you respond to that?
That's CIA. That's generally true with CIA personnel, but that's not true with as most of my colleagues in the former colleagues know in military intelligence.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that particular unit that you were in, it just isn't true as it would be true of a CIA agent.
Correct.
Although I can imagine, really I can, Ed, circumstances where even though the official program is gone, the government in a moment of desperate something or another might get hold of somebody in your field, if not from the old group.
Well, I became the keeper of the keys, and I'll talk a little bit more about that tonight, when America abandoned its Sci-Spy unit. And indeed, that door may need to be opened again in an emergency, but then again, it may not. As far as direct, official or unofficial work right now or connection with the government, there is none. Otherwise, I would not have been able to go to Eastern Europe.
Well, Ed, I think that's crazy. I mean, we had people, since the closing of the unit, blow up buildings in New York, hit the Pentagon. Never has the world seemed more dangerous. So what about that? I mean, isn't it to the point, just about to the point? Look what we're facing in Iraq right now, and God knows what we're facing as a nation.
Art, it's the same logic as one of the news stories that you read, where people are move up into the top positions, controlling positions of very important agencies, but have no experience with the threat.
God, it's true. It's true. Only in our government can that level of incompetence succeed.
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and actually, you turn on the fan.
No.
Okay.
There's nothing silent.
Interesting noise. All right, so look, I understand that you just have returned from what used to be the Soviet Union. You were in, where were you?
Ukraine.
You were in the Ukraine. Why?
I spent 2 weeks in Ukraine.
Why?
Well, the trip was very historic for me.
I understand you talked to my producer, Lisa, from the Ukraine. Is that right?
I did. We had bad connection on my cell phone, but I did talk.
I'll be darned. So what were you doing there?
I had always wanted to go to Eastern Europe, and I'll give you a little background why. The more time I spent spying on the erstwhile Soviet Union, the more respect I began to gain for the very novel approaches to war fighting,
yes,
weapons development. And you may or may not know this, but before and after, both before and after my tenure as operations and training officer for the Psi Spy Unit,
yes,
I was one of just a handful of science and technology targeting officers, and my job was to prevent technological surprise on a future battlefield in some very specialized areas, exotic weapons, biological warfare, parapsychology.
I'm curious, how would you go after, for example, let's say the Soviet Union had some new horrible weapon that we weren't aware of. How would your unit target and even hope to understand what it was they were seeing?
Well, part of the tradecraft is, of course, classified, so I won't get into that part, but,
mm-hmm,
but you can imagine how we did it the other way. We'd first get reports of this information reports that we'd have to check out. There's something over here that may represent a threat, so I would have to orchestrate a penetration mission or at least an intelligence collection mission, and that would include agents that we had in the area, people who had already sold out Russia, their own country, that we were paying.
Right.
And then we would get locational fixes from them or possible locations fixes, and I would target our satellites to look at those locations, then sit down at a light table and see if there's anything really there. And if there is, then I could call in some more exotic systems. And, of course, the Psi Spy unit helped a lot.
All right. The way I understand remote viewing, you end up essentially drawing, for example, drawing something that comes from however you're able to do what you do. But what I was wondering is, if it's not classified, how you could take that drawing and then have somebody interpret that it's some new sort of, I don't know, example, laser, space laser weapon or something very exotic like that.
We sit down. It's not just sketching. It's also a description, detailed descriptions and summaries of what we have there. Now, because we're trained technicians, and that's my job, to be a trained observer, I may not necessarily understand what I'm looking at, but I can describe it succinctly. What I do then is sit down with an expert in that field, let's say a laser physicist or a directed energy weapons guy, and I'll say, okay, this is what we have. Now, that person may automatically or spontaneously recognize what we've drawn, but then again, he or she may not, and then they would ask me questions, and I would say, okay, I'll be back. Go and hit that specific focal point. For instance, we're dealing with a directed energy weapon. Is this thing a neutral particle beam weapon? What kind of polarization does it have? That kind of thing. And I would have to re-cue the question.
I got it.
Yeah, return in my mind.
So you would assign the target. In other words, say you'd report to somebody and they'd want to know about such and such, so you'd assign a target, right, and gather a group and give them the target.
Generally speaking, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you think of the Ukraine? And I mean, how did you arrange your visit to see and take in what?
Well, you have to know, I don't know if civilians know this, but for intelligence officers, depending on where you are and in what position, there is a period that sometimes 5 years, sometimes 10, and it used to be 15, where there's travel restrictions. You can't go anywhere near the countries that you were spying on.
Right.
Okay. So my that ended for me several years ago, because secrets have a lifespan, as you know. Some are longer than others, but most secrets have a lifespan.
Right.
For instance, you know, let's say the stealth bomber during its development was a pretty well kept secret. But you can't keep a secret like that forever, especially when you feel the system. So my travel restriction was over, and of all of the weapon systems that the Soviets had, the one that was the Leviathan, the most deadly weapon on Earth, was the SS-18, a codename, the NATO codename Satan, interestingly enough.
Satan.
And
why?
There's a picture of it on your website.
Why so named?
I have no idea. I guess I don't know.
I mean, was it that bad, meaning good?
I don't think that's the reason that a lot of times the names are just pulled spontaneously out of the computer. The computers spit this one as the next up name for a foreign threat weapon system.
Oh, yeah. I see one launching right there. Oh, my God. Look at that.
Yeah, it's nasty looking, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's on. Lex put that up for
me. And they've still got them, don't they?
No, they don't.
They crunched them?
That was MIRV. That had up to 10 multiple independently targeted reentry vehicles. Yeah, that means up to 10 U.S. cities. Bye bye.
Right.
But because of our treaties, we have been actually helping the Russians demilitarize the SS-18.
Crunch them up, yeah.
But no. They're actually used now. The body. It's still made in Dnepropetrovsk, where I went. The body is still used, and they now use it to launch U.S. satellites because our space shuttle is not dependable enough to do it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So it's an off-the-shelf.
So you actually then, Ed, you went to that particular city, huh?
I went to Dnepropetrovsk, and it was a historic event for me. I felt like I was stepping back into the 1950s.
Ed, I guess I can ask you now, was that particular city, that Russian area, was that an area that you concentrated on a lot and had a lot of assignments?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. It was a closed city.
No wonder you went there. I see. Okay. Got it.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was that because it made the most deadly thing on Earth, and we were never able to really defeat that system if we wanted to. We weren't even able to adequately collect intelligence on it, not to mention put something together in terms of an anti-ballistic missile system that could defeat it. It was undefeatable. And it was the most deadly weapon on Earth. So it had a lot of meaning to me.
Yeah, I bet it did. So what did you find on your visit to the Ukraine? Was it what you thought it would be?
I didn't have a lot of preconceived notions about the country itself, because my focus was on weapon systems there.
Yeah, I can understand your curiosity, though, about that which you were told to concentrate on for so long.
But the people in the city, I was really shocked to find out that they really believed that the Cold War ended, and this is what they believed, that the Cold War ended because of that missile, and not because of the economic collapse of the erstwhile Soviet Union.
No kidding. So, in other words, instead of Ronald Reagan just outspent them and scared them to death, and we just wore them down, from their point of view, the SS-18 thing ended the Cold War. It just scared us so badly.
Correct.
That we threw up our hands.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
That was surprising to me.
And they sell that to the general population there?
They did. And
Wow. That's amazing, Ed. That's absolutely amazing. But I guess when I think about it, not a surprise, every country, including ours, propagandizes its own citizens. I wonder if the whole prospect of a nuclear full-out, you know, conflict just finally scared both sides so damn badly they agreed to get rid of a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm not Politico. I'm an intelligence officer, so that's not my job, and my thoughts aren't along those lines.
Got it. So,
but the people in the country were extremely friendly, extremely warm, extremely accepting, very poor. Their education, very educated, much more so than most Americans. But there are no jobs for college graduates. It's a new democracy, which is exciting, as you know. And as I got closer to the Russian border, however, and talked to Russians, I found that the Russians were very sarcastic in terms of the way they referred to Ukraine. I mean, most people in Ukraine speak Russian and not Ukrainian until you get over to near Moldova and the Carpathians. So, and the Russian people were pretty bitter about giving up the breadbasket of the former
I bet. Yes, I bet. Well, I made a visit in many years earlier, Ed, to Russia. In fact, I had lunch in the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Russia was just in terrible condition. And I'm not sure that it's much better off now. You should have some word on that. But when I was there, it was pathetic.
It's pretty pathetic now, actually. Even though the people are very warm and friendly, the infrastructures are from like 1920s. The water only is turned on for two-thirds of the day.
Wow!
I felt like I stepped back into the 1950s in terms of just being on the streets. And it's going to take them a while to progress economically. That's for sure. But I have to say, I had a good time. The streets are much safer than here in the U.S. People are really warm and friendly. There's some interesting observations. High school kids walking around drinking beer after school was interesting to see.
Really?
But there's no rowdiness. It's just part of their culture. And I'll talk more about cultural differences when we discuss mind warfare tonight. But
yeah, that's going to be a pretty serious topic tonight, isn't it? Mind warfare.
I went to Ukraine, which is exactly 12,000 miles away from my islands here, right through the center of the earth. It's as far as you can go. I went as a tourist, but I'm going back soon as a student. I'm going to study Russian in the city of Odessa. I've always wanted an excuse to study Russian.
So. Did you have many... I know you speak fluent, Mandarin?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Did you have many conversations with Russians and Ukrainians?
I had many conversations with them, but in some parts of Ukraine, the only way I could communicate was with Chinese students who were studying in Ukraine, because very few, in outside of the cities, very, very few people speak English.
Did you ever drop on any of them in conversation that you were once an American spy?
Yeah, I told them the truth.
Did you really? How did that go down?
They pretended like they didn't hear me, which I thought was interesting.
Really?
Uh-huh.
You know, I can understand that, because here in America, if you encountered a Russian and he told you he used to be a Russian spy, you'd kind of go, whoa. So I would imagine that's the equivalent, sort of not speaking is a whoa.
No, I think I've talked to intelligence officers who spied on us, and we've had good conversations and acknowledged each other's profession, former profession.
Oh, really?
Actually, still my profession, but not in the U.S. government.
Have you actually talked to people who were in the Russian mind spy unit?
Art, I met my counterpart after the Cold War ended, Ivan Sokolov.
It says right here, one of the things we're going to be privileged to discuss with Major Dames this morning is an unclassified overview of the existing and emerging threat. Now, that, of course, I guess means to America. Actually, of course, I don't know what it means. Ed, what are you referring to? Are you referring to, when you say threat, are you referring to threat to America, threat to the world, threat of what kind?
Mind warfare threat to America. We're going to be caught with our pants down.
Why do you say this? And if there's an unclassified portion to it, that means there's probably a classified portion as well, isn't there?
I can tell you the topical nature of the classified areas, and then you'll understand what needs to be kept classified and sometimes proprietary.
Okay, try us.
Okay. So what we're talking about here is the advent of mind warfare in the 21st century. And I've only cursorily broached this subject on your shows as a guest in the past. Most of the time I've talked about the passive nature of intelligence collection using mind remote viewing.
Right.
All right. And I think that this particular document that I'm about to refer to has been declassified for the most part. It's a 1970s document that was issued by the Defense Intelligence Agency with some CIA input. It was a national intelligence estimate on foreign parapsychology R&D, research and development.
Oh, yes.
I think it's out and about. Anyway, and I helped contribute to that. It anticipated that early in this century, now, there might possibly be a substantial breakthrough in the defense application of paranormal abilities. And I am telling you now that that assessment was correct, and we're going to get caught with our pants down.
What was it based on, Ed?
It was based on some sporadic and yet effective experiments on the part of both the Chinese and the Russians in parapsychology areas, not merely remote viewing, but apparently they had some naturally gifted psychics in both countries that were doing things that we've talked about earlier on your shows in terms of Qigong masters being able to reach through glass jars, pull out threads, and those kinds of things, and also apportation, again, on the part of the Chinese children particularly.
What is that?
Apportation?
Yes.
Apportation, if you think of teleportation, you think of something being moved from one place to another in the world.
Right.
Okay. The thing that is actually moved is called an apport. The term for the thing that is moved, that is teleported, the term is apport, where what we were looking at in China, for instance, at the time as an intelligence collection officer, were cases where both Qigong masters and certain children were able to disappear things and then recover them somewhere else.
No kidding.
No kidding.
As a human ability to cause something to disappear and reappear nearby, away?
Yes, nearby.
Nearby.
I'm going to talk more about this tonight. In fact, I'll slow down later and talk about it at length, because it can get a little bit complex, and I don't want to lose the audience.
All right.
Okay. Anyway, in everything I'm going to say tonight, I just want your listeners to remember that we're talking about a trained ability here. In order to fight any war, you have to train to fight, and that includes a psi war. Without training, it doesn't work.
Right. Well, the military, our military, Ed, our government, would never do anything without training. I mean, that's like basic to anything they do. Any program they have has lots of training exercises involved in it, so that doesn't surprise me a bit.
Correct. And but anyway, in the future, I anticipate that more and more countries, in fact, quite soon will be jumping on this Psy War bandwagon. The Indian press, I've noticed in the last 6 months, has already stated that their government has an operating RV group that's had some successes against Pakistan, and that the group is modeled against the U.S. unit.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Our RV our remote viewing program was abandoned because it was politically incorrect. And as I mentioned, I became keeper of the keys by default and out of personal interest, and also because I'm politically incorrect in many ways.
Well, I know you are. And I, you know, it doesn't surprise me, really, after reading some about what our government has been doing, that I've always said, you know, if this works, if remote viewing actually works, then there's no way we cannot be using it now. And that would be conventional wisdom. However, there's nothing conventional about the way our government does things. It's insane.
Well, this unit was a real hot potato, white elephant, and it was scary to people in leadership positions that had aspirations toward even higher positions. And on the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, it was also very attractive because in a town, Washington, D.C., where knowledge is power, wow, this was really a sexy thing. And so we became the whores, the red light district of the intelligence community. And that includes Senate Intelligence Committee as well. They wanted to use us under the cover of darkness, but didn't want anybody, their colleagues, to know what they were doing. So you can understand the position that we were in, and especially as a professional intelligence officer, this was not kosher to me. But China, for example, being politically correct in China means something else, and that something else by no means precludes research and development on psi warfare potential. And I have been in China, and I will tell you that they don't even balk when they talk about these kinds of things at all. And they don't have to rely on the Western scientific method, which requires replicability, but also a theory. The Chinese could care less about a theory. They want replicability, and they want to weaponize that. So I'm watching the Chinese because it looks like they are developing a very viable offensive psi program. And note the term offensive, not defensive.
And
catch us off guard.
What do you imagine the capabilities of a mature Chinese unit might be?
I'm going to get into that in detail.
Please, then. And apportation, I really want to get back to that. I mean, that's measurable. Has a case of apportation, the ability to move a solid object from one place to another, been heavily documented?
In China. Because it won't be documented here, because it's a taboo subject, right? The Chinese, they haven't heard of Amazing Randy and the Skeptical Inquirer. Culturally, they have no problem training and using children.
It's a very good point. In other words, they don't even have the concept of a skeptic because they just don't work that way.
Their culture accepts these kinds of things. And even children, they'll put children together as a group. Remember the movie Village of the Damned way back when?
I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't discount something like that happening because children, they're very happy and they're rewarded when they succeed. And you don't have to ask them to open their minds because it hasn't closed yet. So, you know, you may be looking at a global Village of the Damned here in terms of China. I'll get into that more in a moment. Because of our cultural conditioning, the scientists don't even, except in laboratories where they haven't made much progress in terms of the metrics and the parameters, even in the Princeton Anomalies Research Experiment, Dr. John, who you've had on your show,
yes,
and Brenda Dunn, they had no way of evaluating what the dynamics and the mechanics of what was going on in that laboratory where they were attempting psychokinesis. With MIA work, with the Matrix Intelligence Agency work and expert remote viewing, we can model the moments where PK was successful, and we have done that, and I'm going to be elaborating that tonight. That was formerly proprietary, but I'm going to let it loose tonight.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you give me any idea, Ed, and everybody listening, in how many ways, again, you speak fluent Mandarin, in how many ways the Chinese personality, the Chinese mind, the Chinese culture differs from ours? Is it so different that we would not recognize most ways they think at all?
No, it's not like that. My only experience with another race other than my own like that is the red man. Having lived in New Mexico and had friends that were Apache and Navajo, it's been often said that the white man will never really be able to comprehend the mind of the red man. And I think to some degree that's true. Culturally, it's very, very difficult, even with my friends, to really understand them.
But to speak fluent Chinese, you must understand some of the Chinese mindset.
I do. It is not difficult for me to understand China. And that's why I've been watching them so closely in ways that are very different than ours in terms of cultural conditioning.
Well, that's what I was saying, Ed, that you would have to understand or be able to explain to us why, for example, they don't even blink, they don't have skeptic societies, they just accept, and that's very foreign to us.
Well, let me give you an example. Let me give you an example of an uphill battle that I faced in briefing the National Security Council and the White House.
Sure.
As an intelligence officer. My uphill battles were also against the Undersecretary of Defense for Science and Technology and R&D. It's the not invented here syndrome, right? And here's a hypothetical example. The real ones are classified. Okay. Major Dames, of course I wasn't called that then, and I was undercover and they didn't know who I was. Major Dames, we can't accept your intelligence assessment, which wasn't just mine, it was a major part of the intelligence community, and because I worked at the Office of Secretary of Defense level. Major Dames, we can't accept this because the Russians could not have a tactical battlefield laser weapon because we tried to build one and failed. Now I have to sit down and say, Mr. Vice President, or, you know, so-and-so, there's a different philosophy in that country, a different culture. Dialectic materialism, for example, allows one to look at the world a different way than we do, and that results in a different educational structure, a different science, a different engineering approach, and a different technology, and that's why they had a battlefield laser and we don't. I had to do this every time because that's what we call the not invented here syndrome. Our scientists can't do it, so there's no way they could do it either.
So therefore, it's impossible.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And I faced this problem time and again in selling or attempting to sell intelligence products to decision makers. Now it can work the other way too. When I retired from the military, first thing I did was respond to Vice President Dan Quayle's request to see if there were weapons of mass destruction in Kuwait. And I reported back that not only were there no weapons of mass destruction in Kuwait, but Iraq did not have them either. But that administration did not buy that report. So it works the other way as well.
I'll say.
Yeah.
All right. With regard to the threat that we face now, I asked you a few moments ago about the potential capabilities of a Chinese mature unit. What might they do, Ed?
Let me tell you where we're at in terms of mind warfare right now. I mean, there's two aspects here. One is I call it the passive side. It's remote viewing. Science is the psychic intelligence. You know, you have human intelligence.
Yes.
Signal and all that. Science is psychic intelligence. I see now that RV is becoming solely accepted into our culture. I mean, it's in video games now. In fact, the producer of a video game emailed me when it first came out asking me what I thought of, you know, their use of RV in the video game. A feature film now has that, as you know. It's the same technologies that can be used on the battlefield can be adapted for use in the corporate and industrial world, too, for instance. There's no laws that prevent any trained remote viewer from applying their skill in that area. I could go right into the mind of a Bill Gates and look at their most secret new project. That's industrial espionage or business research, as the buzzword is. Yeah. It's remote viewing is a significant combat multiplier. So it offers advantages over an adversary or a competitor. In the military arena, however, the key applications areas are three. Intelligence collection, and I've discussed that at great length on your show, establishing connectivity and getting into inaccessible places and describing
yes.
what's there. Then you have a threat assessment, assessing the threat, the specifics, the detailed things about threats. And this, we're attempting to preclude surprises on future battlefields or in commercial markets. That's what I've been doing with the Chinese, looking at the Chinese program just as I did the Russian program of extra sensors. That's what they were called when they existed. Then you have another key area, and that's using remote viewing for vulnerability assessment, one's own or others. Where are the holes in radar systems, porous system? Where are the penetration routes, the Achilles heel? Or if you're looking at people, if you're vetting and assessing, let's say, a potential agent to recruit, what are their weak points? How can they be co-opted, right?
Sure.
That's the passive side of the house. What I'm going to talk about tonight has never been discussed anywhere on any continent, and that heretofore has been proprietary. And that is remote interference.
Uh-huh.
And that is not, don't construe that with this hypothetical remote influencing, which does not exist. Somebody has been trying to sell the public a bill of goods. There's no such thing as remote influencing using a mind.
All right. That means, in other words, let us say you want to influence the president of Russia.
It doesn't happen.
You're saying it doesn't happen, but this thing called remote interference, whatever this turns out to be, can happen.
Oh, it can and it does, and it is happening. And that's why we better start looking for it on this side of the world.
All right, I'm all up for an explanation. What is remote interference?
Okay. I do want to caveat what I just said about people not being able to influence. A team of trained remote viewers and it can actually, if a person is sleeping, a target individual is sleeping, or if a target individual happens to be in an altered state,
a team
of trained remote viewers can actually
influence.
Make their presence, not influence, but they can make their presence known in a dream state or in an altered state. So, but that's different than influence.
I'm not sure it is. I mean, if you had somebody have a specific dream, for example, that dream might influence some decision they might make.
No, you can't influence their dreams. You can just make your presence known in the dream. That's it.
In the dream.
Yes, you can interfere with a person's dream state, and they'll dream about you or a group of people, but you can't influence the direction of the waking mind using that state. This we know to be true.
Okay.
Okay, but remote interference is different. Now, when I talk about remote interference, I'm not referring to these localized types of things where a Qigong master can do what I said he can do, or we're not talking about psychokinesis or telekinesis, the Geller effect, which is our sister science in remote viewing. What we've done using remote viewing is to model mind over matter at a distance, this spooky action.
Mind over matter at a distance.
That is remote interference. And this is what remote interference is. It's against systems, material, not another mind, but material.
Do you mean, for example, that there might be a foreign plane flying over some ocean, and that conceivably a group of Chinese people trained to do this could cause